Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames, everybody. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and joining me again for the first time in a long time, Mr. Alex Beard.
It's been a long while.
It has been. It's been a little too long, and I'm very happy you're here. And I'm extremely excited because I was trying to figure out what to do for our next episode. I don't know how you follow up one of my favorite movies, so why not do one of the greatest movies ever made, or one of the widely considered
one of the world's favorite movies.
One of the world's favorite movies. And you told me you've never seen The Godfather.
Yeah, I made you an offer that you couldn't refuse.
He really did. And it's perfect because we're right around the 45th anniversary of the movie. It was released I think it had its premiere March 15th. And we're recording this on March 15th.
My timing is apt.
I literally just realized that. This is amazing.
This was all very meticulously planned on my part.
Clearly. So this is very exciting. So, Alex, why haven't you seen The Godfather? What has held you back?
Well, so when I was born in 1989, I ended up living under a rock from that point until today. Today was the first day that I ended up breaching the rock, and I'm now known not as Alex Beard, but Dwayne Johnson, actually.
Oh, wow.
I am the literal rock.
My wife loves you.
I know. I receive all the fan mail.
The first thing you wanted to do when you crawled out was like, I gotta watch The Godfather.
And reply to all these letters. I am really behind the times, everyone.
All these government alerts. Oh, God.
I've seen what everyone else has seen in terms of, have you ever seen a clip of this film played on something? I've seen that, but I haven't seen the actual film.
What do you know about this movie? Like, what are specific things that, without having seen The Godfather, that stand out to you?
So I know that a man comes to The Godfather on the day of his daughter's wedding,
yes,
and he's not happy about that. I know, I can read body language, everyone, uh-huh, and he is not pleased. I know that there's Don Corleone.
Uh-huh.
Is there a Michael?
There is a Michael Corleone.
Yeah, there's Michael.
Played by Mr. Al Pacino.
Al Pacino, yep. I do know that. Is there a Tommy?
It's Tom Hagen.
That was literally just a guess.
Well, you
I
did just, it.
I assumed Tommy Gunn.
Someone
would write.
Ivan Drago is another character in this film. It's so funny because we talk about Al Pacino and he's a huge name now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I mean, this is the movie that kind of made his career. At the time, I think he was just doing like theater stuff.
Yeah.
And Francis Ford Coppola, who was, again, same in the same boat, kind of, he was sort of hired at the last minute because they'd already gone through a slew of directors who weren't interested. And he was really fighting not only to maintain the integrity of the novel on which this movie is based, but he was fighting pretty much every step of the way with the studio, who didn't trust him. He's like this young filmmaker, and they're like, we don't know what you're talking about. And like Al Pacino was one great example of like he fought for Al Pacino, and they were like, no, we don't like him.
This kid doesn't have it.
He doesn't have it. He's not going to make it in Hollywood. to the point where I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they were filming and the studio was actively trying to get rid of Al Pacino.
I can't help but think, like, all right, so what? There were 10 different ways that the studio tried to get him to leave. The first was bed bugs. His trailer was infested. Itching powder in your costume. Oh, what are the antics that they're going to think up next?
I'm sure it was probably lots of stuff like that. Yeah. Where like Al Pacino would like wake up and like they'd be like in his bed with him and they'd be like, you'll never make it. And it would just be terrifying.
Welcome to Hollywood.
But it was like, you know, Coppola every step of the way had to struggle. He wrote the screenplay himself. And the studio wanted him to put it in modern day like Kansas City, and he was like, no, we're gonna do like 20s, 1930s New York, because this is
when I think of the mafia. When I think of the mafia, I think present day Kansas City.
Exactly. I think that's what a lot of people think. So, you know, that was one battle that I kind of wish the studio had won.
But yeah,
it was a struggle. They didn't want Marlon Brando to play the Godfather because Brando, even though he was legendary at the time as an actor, he was also legendary for just being a complete
Yeah, he was difficult. He was a very difficult man.
He would like come to work without pants. He would refuse to memorize lines and would force the director to put cue cards up on the camera.
Was this the film that he sent someone in his stead
to accept
the
Oscar?
And it turned into like a political movement
exactly.
Against the I don't remember all the details.
Native American thing, I think.
Yes,
it was something about the
yeah.
land.
And, yes, it was land rights, I think.
Yeah, he sent a Native American woman to refuse the award on his behalf.
You know,
and it's amazing. I mean, the video is online, and people start booing. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I love
this poor woman.
I love it.
Caught up. Now, in I don't love shenanigans.
I don't love that they booed her. I just love that like that was the kind of antics that he did. It's great.
But
he's like, I'm passionate about this thing, here we go.
I think the studio, I don't know if this is fact or if this is an exaggeration, but I'm almost positive the studio verbatim said Marlon Brando will never star in this movie. And now let's watch Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
No, look who has the last laugh.
So and you know, I think eventually they agreed once they'd seen a screen test of Brando and were like, yeah, it's okay, Marlon Brando, he's amazing. And there were like a bunch of like policies in his contract about like, you cannot delay production, you have to accept less pay, you have to do these things, that he basically had to sign in order
to deal with this. To make his movie.
Exactly.
You know, I have I've only seen, I don't know if I've seen any other Francis Ford Coppola films.
You know, you probably don't need to. I mean, well, okay, let's be fair.
I've seen one.
There's, which one?
I've seen one of his greatest. It's called Captain EO.
Oh,
and it was Michael Jackson 3D spectacular that was at Walt Disney World, specifically Epcot.
Well, if there's one film that perfectly encapsulates his career, it would have to be that.
Yeah. My favorite character in that is this creature by the name of Huda. He looks kind of like an elephant alien. He's got a trunk.
Look him up.
Yeah, look him up. Look him up, everyone.
You won't regret it.
Yeah, listen, let me tell you, that is on YouTube. That I have a feeling I'm going to enjoy that film more than I'm going to enjoy this one. I don't follow the crowds, okay? I haven't watched this movie to this point yet.
Yeah.
But Captain EO is my favorite.
We're going to have to hang out with each other for 3 hours. You realize this. Like, we're going to have to sit down and watch this movie.
Oy, oy, oy. Luckily, Captain EO is on YouTube illegally.
I know. It's true.
Watch a cam of that.
Just go watch that and pretend you watched The Godfather and come back. And you can be a part of it. But Coppola, it's funny. He did The Godfather, which, you know, launched him into the stratosphere of like great directors. And then he did Godfather Part Two, which many consider to be better than The Godfather.
Yeah, that's what everyone's told me.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
I like The Godfather more, but I think The Godfather Part Two is definitely a feat of filmmaking. And I mean F-E-E-T, not F-E-A-T. I mean, it's like a feat. It must be many feet of filmmaking. It smells. But no, I really like Godfather Part Two. Godfather Part Three, I agree with the consensus that it's one of the worst movies ever made. It's pretty terrible. And then he made Apocalypse Now. I've seen Apocalypse Now. You have seen Apocalypse Now?
So there we go.
I mean, that was before Godfather Three. I think that was late 70s.
Okay.
And that was like, I think, the last great Coppola movie. I don't know if anyone can counter that, but I'm pretty sure
Captain EO, I think, was made.
Well,
after
Captain,
that.
I mean, that's a given. But it's so strange that he kind of made three of the greatest movies ever in a row in Captain EO, like as his final.
His pinnacle moment.
And then, like, since he, I don't think he's done anything noteworthy. Which it sounds terrible to kind of dismiss him like that. I haven't seen all of his stuff, but he did Jack, the movie with Robin Williams, who's a 10-year-old as an adult.
Oh, yikes.
It's strange the way his trajectory.
How hard they fall.
It's true. But
damn you, Al Pacino.
It's Al Pacino.
The studio was right.
It's Brando. Brando's from the grave just sabotaging his career.
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
So besides this movie being 3 hours long, I know that's going to be a pretty It's tough because it's 3 hours. It honestly doesn't feel like 3 hours. I really, really love this movie. I genuinely think this might be the greatest movie ever made. What is your excitement level as far as going into watching The Godfather?
I am currently, I would say, at 8. Not me.
On a scale of 100.
On a scale of 100? Uh-oh. I'm an 80. Not me showing up to receive an award, but actually deny award.
Perfect.
Out of 100.
So I'd say that's pretty good anticipation.
Yeah.
So relatively excited. All right.
80 not me. So that's a lot of them.
In the interest of us not being out super late, I say let's just go ahead and get this movie started.
Let's do it.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Okay, we're back. We just watched The Godfather. Alex Beard, The Godfather, is considered to be one of the greatest movies of all time. As we've already discussed, would you agree now that you've finally seen it?
Oh my God, Father. It was good. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was long, though.
It's a long
Holy
movie.
Smokes.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is long and it feels long, but I'm never not into what's going on. I feel like with some long movies, I get very like kind of you start to feel it a bit.
Yeah.
But this one is very like it's just like
the attention deficit starts to kick in and you're like, okay.
You're like, God, I haven't looked at my cell phone. I need to.
I only said it like once where I was like, oh, I don't know if this scene is really necessary. And it was, spoiler alert, the scene in which Don Corleone dies, has a heart attack or whatever's going on in the garden.
There's so many moments where you were kind of like, I remember you were like, all right, I don't know if this is necessary.
Yeah.
And then he starts to keel over and you're like, never mind. But the whole movie, even though it's about 3 hours long, it's like every single scene is like that. Where you're like, I mean, there's no way you could cut this or that. And they're really, even if you could, you wouldn't want to because it's so full of just insane, amazing, like iconic moments. Like every time,
it's all important to the narrative for sure.
Yeah,
because I mean, the growth of Michael and all the other characters too, to see their downfall or their rise. I mean, all of the moments are very important in terms of like the, I don't know, I guess the mob syndicate underworld.
Right, and this movie basically just kicked off every single movie or TV show in that genre.
Yeah.
And it's easy to understand why. I mean, the movie still like holds up. Like you've seen you were talking about The Sopranos and how there were scenes.
There were a couple scenes that felt very Soprano-ish.
Right. I've seen, I think the first season of Sopranos.
Okay.
I really want to watch the whole thing through.
Have you
seen the whole thing?
Yeah, I've seen it all the way through.
So, I mean, even.
That's what I was doing instead of watching this film.
Right. But even having seen The Sopranos all the way through and like, I'd have to imagine, I mean, that was what, like, 5-6 seasons, and it's pretty exhaustive as far as an artistic depiction of the mafia.
Yeah.
But even with that, do you feel like The Godfather had something unique to add to the table and something that was worth your while?
Yeah, I think a lot of that lives in like the period piece nature of it. Because it's fun to see the same type of environment, but in a different era.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is really interesting. And then also, this one was focused more, I don't know, I would say it's focused more intensely on the individual characters, but Sopranos is the same. So I don't know. I thought they were both good. I also liked how it really showed the full distance that like Michael had to go. So him going to Sicily and being in exile for a while there and all the different elements. I mean, all of that really adds up to flesh out the piece. The one thing that I couldn't necessarily put a pin on though throughout the whole thing was the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
I really need to look up how long a bruise lasts for.
Yeah.
Because he gets exiled after, you know, he gets
punched
hit
in the face real bad.
So like how long does a bruise on your face last? Because he got married and came back. And basically the whole time that he was gone, he had a shiner.
Life. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. And I think we need to call in our science.
They called him Shiny and Michael.
Shiny and Michael.
Shiny and
Michael.
We need
to call in our science team.
We do.
Fellas, to you, are they not?
They're
not on the budget.
Yeah, no, they're not on the budget.
Right. Well, I guess we'll have to assume
we had to fire them.
So some amount of time
yes.
it took place. Yeah, it's amazing watching this movie, and every time I watch it, I'm just blown away by it. Just you feel the power of cinema watching this movie.
It's, you know, like, who else was blown away by this film? Michael's first wife. Good Lord. Good Lord.
Too soon. But
sorry, Michael.
This movie really captures, I think, in The Sopranos, I know they talk about it a lot, how The Godfather, it's like, those are the good old days.
Yeah.
And The Godfather is the passing of the torch.
From
The days when the mafia demanded respect and there was honor to it.
And that it was a legitimate business.
It was a legit business.
We don't get into drugs.
Right, exactly.
No siree.
Drugs are bad. But the movie really focuses on that kind of, those golden days sort of shifting and the new age coming in and taking over the corruption. And you really see that in Michael's character, how you have this kind of like,
He was a good guy.
Kid. Yeah, he was the kid, and his, you know, Don Corleone never wanted him to get into the family business. And
Don Corleone wanted him to be Jack Kennedy. He wanted him to be JFK.
He wanted him to be like the sort of semi sleazy politician,
exactly,
who could basically
connected to the mafia
a little bit, but you know,
still a good guy.
You know, he tells him, I wanted you to be able to pull the strings and whatnot from like a legit standpoint, but Michael, as much as he wants to distance himself from the family, can't escape the grasp of power and that desire for it.
Yep.
It's a fascinating movie to watch. And, you know, just from the beginning, the first time you see Marlon Brando as the Godfather, it's just like, it takes you a moment. It's almost, I would almost compare it to when you see an actor or, an artist that you've like admired and loved and seen like in videos for years and years in person, where you have that weird disconnect where it's like, oh, I'm seeing this happen.
Yeah.
I always feel like that when I first see him.
Yeah.
Because you've seen it parodied. You've seen it in so many.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Here's
a
montage of the greatest movies ever. Did you get that? I mean, I get that vibe a lot watching this movie. Did you get that vibe as you're watching it? Did you kind of feel that sort of like sense that you were watching something great?
No, but I also don't have I think part of that might be like sentimental value for like those clips and all those things. And I really never paid them much attention, because the one thing that I do try to do is like when stuff like that comes on, I always try to avoid it or like change the channel or like not pay attention to it. So like the parodies, obviously, like that's not that big of a deal. But like all the like clips and individual elements, like I don't know if like, a good example is like if AFI is like doing like just individual clips or of a film or something like that, I'll always try to ignore it or like change the channel or like, you know, avoid it at all costs, because I don't want any spoilers.
Yeah.
And who knows? Like, I trust no one. Like, I don't even care if you're like a legitimate, you know, film company. Like, look at these great films that we've created. You're going to ruin them. Like, there's going to be something that I see.
Well, you see it in the Oscars where
every
big moment is every prime acting moment is like the big spoiler of the movie.
Oscar winning moments,
but that's a smart way to watch a movie like this. It's to go in completely blind. You know, there are times where I wish I could do that with a lot of these movies. I feel like with a movie like The Godfather, it was so ingrained in society and that I just knew about it that like...
The one thing I will say is all I could think about though was just Marlon Brando being a huge the whole time. Like I could just see it. Like and the one thing I said to you is I remember reading from before, and I didn't mention this earlier, that he like would not memorize his lines.
Yeah. He was notorious. I don't think it was just limited to this.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's just who he was. That would be such a pain in the butt to direct that.
No,
like, good Lord.
But I know Coppola, even though Brando caused a lot of trouble and was basically...
I mean, like, he did a great job.
I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of gets away with it. But he, I know he had Coppola's back. Because, I mean, like we were saying previously, Coppola had to jump over a lot of hurdles to get this movie made. And not just to get it made. I mean, not necessarily to get it made, but to prove himself.
Yeah.
And then constantly, at every turn, the producers were like...
Something new.
Second guessing him. They were like, oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
That's stupid. Why is the lighting dark?
Well, those producers were really dumb.
Very smart.
They were very, very dumb. Al Pacino, great in that film.
I
probably
know.
One of my favorite Al Pacino films now.
Well, you would not be alone in that that assessment.
Man, like he was great in this film.
He really is.
His character transformation is excellent.
Yeah, and he it's crazy. Like Al Pacino, I mean, we were talking about it. There's the scene where he first starts to kind of take his first baby steps into the world of the mafioso, where he's talking about, like, you know, what can we do? Can we kill these guys?
Yeah.
And they're kind of, he's like, I'll go in there and I'll do it myself. And yeah. everyone kind of laughs at him and they're like, Michael, you can't do that. You're crazy. You're, you know, you're not involved in this.
It felt very Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Well, how so?
Just in the sense of, like, he's teetering on the dark side.
Yeah. Just a little bit. Just, he's got
he's
that
taking little baby steps.
That moment where,
except instead of, man, I'm just spoiling everything. But instead of Luke, you know, staying on the good side, yep. he was like, "We're all in, full baby,
in, full in,
full red house.
Saber, I'm a robot, whatever." Beep, but he, boop, boop. What's so funny about that scene is, and we were just talking about it, how they kind of his brother and like everyone is kind of mocking him and making fun of him, but like. Al Pacino's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, there's never a
he's
moment.
A scary man.
There's never a moment where I doubted that he would totally kill somebody without a second thought.
Yeah.
And it's so funny that it's like, and it's something I noticed watching this time, and I don't know if you noticed this, and I don't know if other people have noticed this. It's interesting. Michael's character, even though he does go through a change, almost feels like, I don't understand what it is that attracts him. Like, what attracted him? Because you get the sense at the beginning, he's like,
yeah, what's the motivation?
What's his motivation for yeah. jumping into it? Now, you know, how I've kind of reconciled it is he sees his father and his family being attacked. And at first he takes it on as like, I want to protect my father from these people.
Yeah.
And then he kind of gets a taste of it. And he starts to realize, oh, wait, I like this. And I like being in control.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you never get the sense that he's that type of person. I almost feel like they never planted the seed.
The only thing that I would reconcile that with is when he's in the hospital and he sees the crooked nature of, like, the cops, you know, basically booked all
yeah,
the guards.
True.
That's the only thing that I could think where he's like, screw this. Like, these people are out to get my family, and family matters to these people.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I could connect. It wasn't even his father getting shot. It was just that not only was his father shot, but also people are conspiring against him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. People yeah. are, like, trying to tear his
and
family
legitimate,
apart.
Supposedly legitimate people are conspiring against him because it was the police that were doing it.
Yeah,
so
they punch him in the face.
Yeah. So how are you going to be a senator if the cops are crooked too? You know,
exactly. So as far as this movie goes, we've talked about like iconic moments. Did you notice any like connections specifically? Like, you know, we got
yeah.
the Sopranos. We've got like, you know, like I said,
so
almost
specifically,
any mafia movie.
Yeah. Specifically the scene in the field was the one that connected me to the Sopranos. Like that,
leave
like
the gun,
in
the
marsh.
Take the cannoli.
Exactly. Leave yeah. the gun, take the cannoli. And I even commented like, I've heard that before. Like that's pop culture.
Right.
But I honestly, like if you would have said, is that something from The Godfather on a test? I probably would have gotten it right. But like, if I would have just heard that cold, I would have been like, I don't know. Is that from the Sopranos?
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't
yeah.
have known. But the other moment was when it's the first like mafia leaders meeting, family meeting, when they're talking about drugs and about not selling them. It reminded me of the like the pimp leaders meeting in Black Dynamite, where the one pimp's like, "But Black Dynamite, I sell drugs in the community." It felt like the polar opposite of that, and I'm pretty sure that's where they pulled
I think
from.
You, like me, just want to see Black Dynamite in
I
everything,
do. I,
not
yeah.
just movies, but life in general.
I think that's a sign of a really great film.
So,
Black Dynamite.
So
is
Black Dynamite.
Beautiful.
Let's talk about Black Dynamite. so as far as the moments that you'd heard about, was there anything that you knew about going into the movie that you were like, aha, this is great, and that lived up to your expectations? Were there things that surprised you?
Yeah, no, the thing that definitely lived up to my expectation was the horse head. That was one thing that I knew about, and as soon as I saw the horse, I was like, this is not going to end well for you, Mr. Stud.
Did you know that is the head in the bed is an actual horse head?
I think I had heard that somewhere. It looked very real.
I mean,
that was intense.
They spared no expense.
I love how that guy could sleep through that too. Like, what?
How did they slip the horse head?
He's
in
like,
the
I am so tired.
Because there's blood everywhere. So it's like did they?
It's like sleeping in a wet blood cocoon.
I know. Like, did they take the blanket like and just like very carefully like just
threw it in
blood
and
all over it, and then they kind of carefully.
I guess
put
it gushed
up
a little bit over the nighttime.
I think it did, because
that guy is a heavy sleeper.
I never thought about.
He
that.
Needs to go to a doctor. He needs. Yeah. See a sleep specialist because there's something wrong.
Yeah, the horse's head in his bed is the least of his problems.
Oh, I'm talking about the horse.
Oh yeah. there's so many great moments in this movie as far as great filmmaking goes.
So
like,
I think the one thing that I really take away, so like this movie in my mind is a tragedy. Like, yeah, every way, absolutely. Every way I look at it is a tragedy. And I think the character that is the largest, that has the largest impact on me in terms of it being a tragedy is Michael's second wife, Kay.
Uh-huh.
Man, that is just
first,
such a...
First girlfriend, second wife.
Man, what a kicker that is. And the fact that, like, I don't know if she is just kidding herself or what the deal is, because she knows about that family. Like, he literally point blank told her at the wedding, like, yeah, my dad had this person killed. Like, that's how he rolls.
That's how we work.
And then at the very end, she's like, you got to tell me. Like, please just tell me. And he's like, all right, I'll tell you the truth just this one time about my business, because normally I don't talk about my business. Yeah. And then he says he didn't do it. And she's like, oh, thank goodness.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
But she has like a, like, she's happy and elated that she knows that he didn't do it. But then at the very end, there's a glimmer of like, wait a second.
And then the door gets slammed in her face. One of the most iconic scenes in movie history.
But that is tragedy.
It is. And you know, it she does not, what's great about Kay's character and the way Diane Keaton plays her, she strikes you as naive, but she doesn't seem like an idiot.
No.
She's very smart. She's intelligent.
Yep.
It does. I mean, it is kind of a stretch to believe that Michael could come back into her life, tell her that he's been back in town for a year, and she could just be like, okay, let me get in your car with you and we'll
get
married.
Love runs deep, man.
But, like, I mean, you totally believe it.
Yeah.
And, like, that scene is particularly heartbreaking because you, as the audience, want to believe with her. Like, you know that much better.
Yeah.
But your heart breaks because you're like, God, I wish that was that we could react and that your reaction was earned and that we
just
feel that
we can go see a show in the city and everything will be normal.
It's going to be fine.
It'll all be fine.
Are there any as far as favorite scenes go in this movie? Is it a scene that, like we were already saying, is iconic and you knew about beforehand? Is it a scene that stood out to you that you never heard of? What is the scene in this movie where, like, if you were trying to convince somebody to watch The Godfather, not that many people should need convincing, but, like, as somebody who's never seen it before, how would you convince yourself, like, you've got to see this movie? And it doesn't,
so,
I mean, maybe not necessarily a scene, but, like, just,
yeah,
like,
I would say, like, the first hour of the film during the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that. Like, I think that could be a film on its own.
Yeah.
Just the interactions.
When it finally faded out, you went, the end.
The
end. Feel like this is the end.
Yeah. Like, that right there could have been just a... And I almost would love to see this movie recreated and just have a continuous timeline of all these people interacting at this wedding.
Yeah.
And, like, the mafia syndicate. Like, I don't need any of the other story. I think that right alone would be a fantastic film.
I can't even imagine how you organize something like that to shoot it.
Yeah,
like
that would
I
be
mean,
a
that's
mess.
Controlled chaos of the finest order, but, like...
I also love the stark nature between the first wedding and then Michael's first wedding when they're in Italy. It is very different. Like, the Italian wedding is very somber. And that struck me as being interesting as well.
Oh, the Sicilian wedding? Or the Sicilian wedding, the second one is very, like, very muted and almost traditional. Mm. And the first one is way more, like, robust. Like, it's
And what's interesting bombastic. Is I would have assumed that culturally, like, a lot of the things that were presented would have been traditional of a Sicilian wedding. Yeah. But clearly, either that wasn't the case, or because Michael's was so somber, because he was in Sicily, or... Like, that is like an American twist, and I don't know enough about Sicilian weddings to know one way or the other.
Yeah, well,
but
you gotta go to a Sicilian wedding.
Yeah,
I'm telling
I, clearly
you,
I do.
Amazing. no, but I you know what I love. There's so much about this movie that I love. I love the wedding. I mean, the opening shot just of the guy talking about his daughter being.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I could literally go frame by frame and just be like, I love this and I love
that. And
that
guy really got off the hook easy. I mean, all he had to do was his normal job.
Yeah,
with Sonny.
True.
Like, I thought he was going to have to do something nasty.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. I mean, technically, it's kind of nasty work dealing with Sonny, who got completely blown
away. He got blown
but
to
you're
bits.
Right. It, for the most part, it was like, oh, what sketchy thing is he going to have to do for the Don? Oh, that's not so bad. Not too bad.
Just your normal job. Just plug a few holes, throw them in the earth.
What do you think of Sonny's character? I felt like you were like, yes, I love him. And then when he got blown away, I felt like that hurt you.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked Sonny's character also because I knew like that was coming. Like Sonny was he had too much
it's
bravado.
Too hot-headed. Yeah.
It's too much. Yeah. Too much bravado. Too hot-headed. And what's interesting about him is like, I wouldn't have necessarily pegged him for being hot-headed until Don Corleone was at the very top was like, No. We never like tell our thoughts.
I love that.
What a great moment. Yeah. Like we don't tell our opinions or our thoughts to people, which is like, that's so mafia. That's so like smart businessman. Like you keep everything close to the vest.
Well, it's great. I love, what is the line? It's like a man who doesn't have time for his family can never really be a man. Like,
yeah,
there's so many great lines like that. Is there one that stands out to you off the top of your head?
I think it's just the sound of the ignition key going off and then the car exploding.
You're really fixating on this car explosion.
Mostly because I did not expect that at all. Like, I knew something bad was going to happen, but I was well, I figured, like, what year is it? Like, they're probably not going to have cars that, nope, car exploded.
It exploded.
That exploded.
That's why the movie won Best Picture.
I also think it's kind of terrible that it was like, she's been learning how to drive for you, and then, she's going to show you how she can drive.
And Michael is just kind of like, all right, I'll go marry the other one.
Great. Not this shit again. Saw things. Wait, how many times do you think Michael was married during the war? Based on his reactions, easily three times. Three times.
And I mean, based on the way the time passes in this movie, it could have been like twice as much.
Because he's got
it seems to pass in the blink of an eye.
He gets married like he eats gabagool.
I don't know what that means.
It's a thing.
It's great. I love it.
It's a thing.
So I think one of the most beloved scenes in the film is the baptism scene.
Yeah.
Which is like,
I honestly did not know because I didn't recognize many of the faces, and I knew the one guy had asked for 6 months. I didn't know what was being prepped, and I think that was probably intentional.
Yeah.
I didn't know who was going to get shot.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
This is great. This movie does an amazing job of just building that kind of suspense. And I mean, it's hard for me to disconnect now that I know. Like,
and the score does a good job of that, too.
Exactly. It's fantastic. And I, you know, as soon as we get to the church, I know, this is the scene where they kill the five heads of the families. And I mean, I just know, and I immediately am like latching onto it. But it's hard to remember what it was like to watch it from a first time viewer, just not knowing, like you're saying. It's a lot.
See,
of
I was
shots.
Worried that the five heads of the family were mounting like multiple redundancies to kill Michael.
Yeah.
Now, granted,
that was what the plan was. They kept talking about like, oh, they're going to come after you. And Michael's like, no, I'll worry about it later.
And that's kind of why I thought that.
Yeah.
Because they kept hinting at that. But at the same time, like, I knew that there's a part two. I knew Al Pacino's in part two. So I was like, well, he lives.
No sequels.
He lives. This is what happens when you watch a film way after it's released.
Yes.
That was my fault. I deserve it.
My bad.
I deserve it.
Okay.
I really enjoyed this film a lot, though. It was a lot of fun. And I think one of the other things that I really enjoy is the scene, because I like discounted it right off the bat, but the scene where Don Corleone dies.
Yeah.
Like, that watering can and, like, the kid and then him making the face of the kid and kind of playing this, like, Frankenstein-esque character. And the kid being terrified but then having a good time. And then he just dies. And the kid's like, ha ha.
The movie does that a lot. It does such a bait and switch where it's like, everything's fine.
Yeah.
Boom. Like, something terrible happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, when he's out shopping and all of a sudden
it's an emotional roller coaster.
It is. And, I mean, the movie is constantly just wowing you with its performances and the filmmaking. I mean, it is incredible. Like, just watching this movie and thinking about all the trouble that Coppola was going through, it just begs the question, do you think, and because we've heard about this, some of the best movies have come from some of the worst production, like production hell. And this is one of them. Star Wars is one of them.
Uh-huh.
What do you think it is? Like, I mean, how do these movies end up coming together the way they do? Like, after all this, like, trial and tribulation that these filmmakers are still able to pull it together and do it. Do you think there is something to be said about like the struggle of going through that? Because I mean, like, you look at Coppola's later career where he can get whatever he wants, and same with George Lucas, and their films are like, you know?
Yeah, I think part of it probably has to do with like collaboration at the top. So like George Lucas is creating all these new, or trying to create new technologies and like really push. So I look at George Lucas more as like a technology and like almost like cinema science, I guess, figurehead rather than a director.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he found success with this film. I don't know. I want to say, like, they probably just kept filming and filming and filming, and then they would sit down at the end of the day and be like, all right, what was good?
Yeah,
let's go back and look at it again.
I can't even begin to imagine.
But then again, like, if you're doing that, I mean, how many days of shooting was that wedding scene?
Right.
Because, like...
Can you imagine just sitting in an editing room and watching wedding? Like, God, stop it. Just, like,
and I think,
so much
like,
wedding.
Of something that was this complex, like, when they filmed it versus the time period that it came out, like, there were a couple times where I was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, a matte painting. And then they would pan down and there would be cars moving. And it's like, well, maybe part of that was a matte painting, but like the rest of it was like actual cars. Right. And I don't even know if it was a painting, honestly. Like the moment in particular that I'm talking about is when they were in old Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I was like, it has to look different in the 70s, right. But maybe not. And then another moment that I noticed where I was like, I think I just saw someone wearing like short sleeves was when they were going underneath the subway with a car, like the elevated subway in New York. And there was someone, it was supposed to be Christmas time, and there was someone walking with like a short sleeve dress shirt. And it's like, I think you might use the wrong, you might have used the wrong film here.
Right.
But that, I think, is a testament to say, like, how well they were doing. Because, the complexities of, like, there was an overpass. And I watched the overpass during the funeral scene.
Yeah.
And there was every car that went over that overpass.
Was of the period.
Was of the period.
That
is a testament to skill of these filmmakers. Like, that is a huge production, like, task to... like bank off this road and only have, you know, basically approved vehicles drive on the road.
Yeah.
And then same for on the street that they're actually filming on, you know, where
wide shots too, where
graveyard
it's like,
was.
Like you were saying, you thought it was a matte painting, but then it's like you see even off in the distance.
Yeah, things are moving.
Cars of the time period.
It clearly wasn't. It just they picked the exact right locations that looked like, you know, 1930s, 1940s
LA. It's just insane. I mean, the 70s were like this movie kind of kicked off a decade that literally changed cinema. Like Godfather was at the beginning, Jaws came in 75, and then Star Wars was in 77.
I want to say that like I honestly think I would love to know how long they filmed for this film. Mm-hmm. Like what was the production length? So I'm baffled. I feel like this movie would have taken an extremely long time to film. And maybe that's just part of me like mentally biasing myself because the film is 3 hours long.
Right.
But it feels like it could have been years of them filming because they film in California, they film in New York, they film in New Jersey, they film in Sicily.
Yeah.
Which maybe, I mean, that's got to be Sicily. Like they
it
had
is.
To
oh,
film.
Absolutely
yeah.
it is. Like, so apparently, I mean, they shot the movie, the entire production started at the end of March 71, I think, which is insane because the movie came out in 72.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they went to August.
Wow.
So that means they had to turn it around for a March release.
I don't think anyone was sleeping.
I don't think so either. And I, you know, like you said,
I think that's how Marlon Brando actually got his shots. He was literally eating between each take because they were just on the move so much.
That
He's
must
like,
be it.
That was the food that was down in his jaws.
They were just like, they're like, don't spit it out.
They're
we're
like,
just,
no, no, no. We love it. We love it.
Just
He's like,
doing
I got
it.
Food in my mouth.
They're like, just do it.
Just keep going. We love it. Yeah, that was the other thing that kind of, I would love to know what was his technique for that. Like, did he have like some kind of prosthetic in his mouth?
I think they were saying like I don't know if it was just for the audition. I know for the audition he had cotton balls in his mouth, and I'm pretty sure
something
the
along
legend
those lines
is that he did.
Yeah continued
for the
through.
Entirety of the production.
Yeah, what an amazing feat
it is. So, all right, somebody comes to you says The Godfather is the greatest movie of all time. Do you agree with them? Is that something you could be okay with accepting?
No, but I would say it's up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I would give it a solid, if I'm going to give it numbers again.
Let's do cannolis.
Okay.
On a scale
Can
of
I
one
do
to
horse's
five
head?
Cannolis.
Horse heads?
One to five horse's heads. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Horse heads. I'm going to go a 1 to 5.
Let's do it. Yeah.
I'm going to go 4.5 horse
All
heads.
Wow.
I mean, I really enjoyed this film. And it would be like, I mean, we're talking like top 10. Like it was very, very good.
So what is holding it back from greatness for you?
I think it just was the length of the film.
Okay.
And it's nothing, it's no slight against the film itself. It just was that there were multiple times where I was like, man, like this
sleep.
Is really long. Like I'm getting hungry. Good lands. But that is just a personal thing, though. Like, that's a personal preference. Like, I haven't seen, Daniel Day-Lewis in...
Oh, Gangs of New York?
Yeah, yeah. So I have not seen Daniel Day-Lewis in Gangs of New York, and I have not seen Of Gods and Generals or Gods and Generals God, or whatever that film was. Because they're so long. I can't sit through that long.
Can't deal with it.
I can't handle it. All right. It's too much.
I understand. I really love The Godfather. I honestly, even though it's not my personal favorite film, I'm perfectly happy calling it the greatest movie of all time.
There's so much about it
that's just like, it's so good. And, you know, the first movie we did for Missing Frames was Citizen Kane, which is widely considered to be the greatest.
Yep.
That's a movie where I watch it and admire it for its technique, but don't necessarily like feel invested in it.
Yeah.
The Godfather, I admire for its technique and I feel invested.
Yeah.
I feel like that alone pushes it to the top of the list.
No, I mean, it's very good. I almost wish, and maybe the other thing is just like minor technical things. Like when they would do like fight sequences and things like that, some of it would feel kind of like
Sonny
fakey.
Punching him. Yeah. You could like see those misses.
No contact. Yeah. It's like little things like that. But you know what? They made this movie in 4 months. Like that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive. You're not going to be able to have everything be 100% perfect.
Very much so.
Time.
So are you interested in seeing Godfather 2 and 3?
I am.
But maybe with intermission.
For a while there, I honestly thought that Godfather Part 2 was just going to be the film Casino based on the fact that they were getting into Vegas. But, you know, I'm excited. Who knows what's going to go on?
Be Viva Rock Vegas with the Flintstones.
Fair enough.
I thought that's where we were going.
That's actually my number one film. That's right there.
It's short. It's sweet. Yeah. It has plenty of
Yabba Dabba, my favorite.
All righty. Well, Alex, thank you so much. I'm so glad this worked out that we got to watch The Godfather on the actual 45th anniversary of its initial
release.
What a day. Which is great.
What a day.
So, people, thank you so much for tuning in. What do you think of The Godfather? Is it the greatest movie of all time? I think it is, but maybe you think something else is. Maybe you like The Godfather Part 2 more. What do you think? Reach out to @JoinNerdParty on Twitter, or you can reach out to me @YeShondorman. Alex, where can people reach you?
People can find me on Twitter @MrAlexBeard.
Right, so just let us know if you like it. Let us know if you don't like it. Do you think The Godfather's overrated? You might be crazy, but like we want to hear about it. And give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or wherever. If there's a rating system wherever you're listening to us, give us the highest because you love us and you want to support us. But anyway, Alex, thank you again.
Of course.
Great to have you back on
the show.
Thanks
for having me.
Absolutely. And everyone out there, take care.
I hope you don't find a horse head in your bed.